Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas mini bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 351 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Nissan Rogue, the Chevy Silverado EV RST First Edition, the 2024 Mama Spring Rally, the Kia EV3, the Honda Civic Hybrid, iOS taking on motion sickness, California Speed Alerts, the Polaris Slingshot R, and the BMW Skytop. All that and more coming up next. I'm Sam Abul-Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I'm Nicole Wakelin from the Road Ref... No, I'm not. I'm Roberto Baldwin.
You sound different.
I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE International. Nicole's doing things.
Yeah, she's traveling this holiday weekend. You know, me and you were just stuck at home.
She's a brave woman.
I know.
Traveling on the holidays.
I know. It's crazy.
The thing is, when you're like us and you travel so much, the idea of traveling during like a holiday just seems like just the worst.
Yeah.
It just, occasionally you'll go on a trip and it's like right when there's like spring break or something else, and you'll get to the airport and there's all of these people that aren't usually there. Like, who the hell are these folks?
It's like amateur hour, you know, it's like people who don't travel frequently and they, you know, they don't know the routine. I mean, you know, when we travel for work, you know, it's like, we always have everything set up. Like, for example, you know, before I had PreCheck, you know, I would always have everything. I'd have my pockets emptied out while I was riding on the shuttle from the parking lot to the airport, you know, put everything in my backpack. So the only thing I had left was my phone and my ID. And now I just put my wallet right in my backpack because I don't even have to take my ID out anymore because they have digital ID here in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Watching people, they're like in line and about five, they're like two people from talking to TSA agent. And they're just like, oh, I guess I should do this thing. And they start doing it. Like, I get off the shuttle. Like, in the shuttle, I take my keys out of my pocket, put everything in there. Then I get out of the shuttle. I take my belt out because they changed the TSA, the machines, because I had a belt that would never set off the machine. And then it started setting it off. So now I have to take my belt off. So I had a specific belt that was perfect for TSA, and now it doesn't work anymore because they've changed the machines. It's happened at different airports. They tuned them. I don't know what they did. But I take my belt off, and then by the time I'm going, I just have my ID because I'm constantly being told that I've been randomly checked for my ID. I don't know why. So I always have like, okay, just in case. But I have clear and TSA pre-check, and yeah, I just waltz through. And as soon as I get the thing, I dump them both in my bag and go to the machine and check my But then people are like, oh, I've never done. I have TSA pre, but I wore my 18 hole boots. I got to unlace these. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, you're the worst.
Yeah. Always got to wear shoes that you can easily slip on and off. And yeah, it's like, not, you know, you don't want to be messing around with any of that stuff. Anyway, enough of that.
Anyway, enough about traveling because we're home. Yay.
home for the long weekend. Although I was away for a couple of days this past week, but we'll come to that in a little bit. But to get to where I was going, I actually didn't fly at all this week. I drove.
Yay.
I spent a lot of time driving this week. And I drove from my home outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan, to Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, because that's where the Midwest Automotive Media Association has their annual spring rally, which, despite the name, is not actually a race. It's just a gathering of of mama members. Hold on a second.
And dogs.
and dogs. you can mama members get to attend this thing. There's a whole bunch of automakers that bring out a whole bunch of cars. There was about 80 vehicles there this year. Some of which you get to drive on the track. Some of them were on an off-road course. And some of them were just for street driving. But to get there, I drove a 2024 Nissan Rogue all-wheel drive Platinum.
Wow. Which is, so the best of the best of the Nissan Rogue.
Absolutely. And it's actually a good car. I like the Rogue. I've never had any major issues with particularly with the current generation of the Rogue. I like the way it looks. It's got a little, sharper edge styling than a previous generation. And last year they did a mid-cycle update, and replaced the engine. So the original 2.4 liter naturally aspirated four cylinder that was in there is gone. It's now the Rogue is now powered by a 1.5 liter three cylinder turbocharged engine. Which also has continuously variable or the variable compression ratio. So this is the same technology that they have on the 2 liter four cylinder that's in a bunch of Infiniti and Nissan vehicles now. You can get it in the Altima. It's in the Infiniti QX55 and QX50, and I think a couple of other models as well. The 1.5 liter version, the three cylinder version. Puts out 201 horsepower, 225 foot-pounds of torque, which is a little more than the variant that's in the or the 2.4 liter four cylinder that was in there before. Still with Nissan's Xtronic CVT, which is fine. Nissan probably does CVTs as well as anybody. In terms of the way they feel, they have some simulated. It doesn't just rev up to 4,000 RPM whenever you step on the accelerator and sit there and motorboat. It kind of cycles up and down, kind of like a traditional transmission, but in a with slightly more efficient programming. All-wheel drive on the version that I had, and it's got drive modes on there. With the Platinum, you get leather seats and moonroof, glass moonroof, and ProPilot Assist, 19-inch alloy wheels. Basically everything on here. The other things that are new for 2024, they did some very slight restyling. The grill is changed. So the old V-Motion grill that had a solid chrome sort of V shape around the sides, the sides and the lower perimeter of the grill has been replaced. And now on the horizontal bars, the outer edges of the bars are chromed. So instead of a solid chrome bar going around the grill, it's now an interrupted chrome strip around the grill. So it's a little more subtle. I think it looks a little better than the previous version. It's certainly a newer take on that concept. And then the other big change in the interior is the infotainment system. The Rogue is the first Nissan vehicle to get a new Android Automotive-based infotainment system with Google services built in, which we've talked about previously. Basically the same kind of thing you find in GM vehicles and Volvos and Polestars and now on Hondas and Acuras. Same set of services. You get Google Maps as the default maps, Google Assistant, and a variety of other services, and of course you get the Play Store so you can download other apps that you want. Unfortunately, the Rogue that I was driving had what you get is I think 8 years of connectivity for Maps and Assistant. But then you have to pay at least I think you have to pay for connectivity for apps, for streaming apps. Or at least if it's not paid, you still have to activate it. And it wasn't activated on mine. So when the car was first delivered, I was sitting in my driveway, hooked up to my Wi-Fi, in my garage, and, downloaded some apps, downloaded Pocket Casts and YouTube Music. And then when I went to drive somewhere, I noticed that they wouldn't connect to stream anything. because that connectivity wasn't turned on.
I had the same issue. The Nautilus had nothing turned on. Like, it just was off. And I just feel like there, somebody somewhere needs to, you know, when you send the things out to the fleet, turn it on.
Yeah.
Just make sure everything's on.
Fortunately, unlike a GM EV, they still have support for smartphone projection. So I was able to just plug in my phone and use Android Auto. And so I could stream stuff through there. The other thing, you know, you could also do is that I didn't bother doing is I could turn on hotspotting on my phone and so use that as the Wi-Fi connection from the infotainment system and just use my phone as the internet connection.
But that's
You know, I could have done that. Didn't bother. I just turned on the Android Auto. So I used the Google Maps that were built in to the car because that all worked and Google Assistant worked and then just streamed media from my phone. And that worked fine. Kept me entertained on the seven and a half hour drive from where I live to Elkhart Lake. You know, it's a comfortable vehicle to drive. Handles reasonably well for, you know, for what it is, a, you know, compact crossover. It's roomy enough. The back seat is also very roomy, plenty of cargo space in the back. And, you know, the performance was more than adequate. And fuel economy was also surprisingly good. It's EPA rated at 31 miles per gallon combined, 28 city, 34 highway. I was doing mostly highway driving, did some, you know, some urban driving, and suburban driving, but mostly highway. Averaged about just shy of 33 miles per gallon over the whole week.
Cool.
Which is,
well, I mean, it's a pretty small motor.
Yeah.
And it has the variable compression, which is hopefully paying off more than it was when it first came out, which is like, look at it. We're like, oh my God, you know, all the big nerds were like super excited about it. And then you looked at the difference in efficiency. You're like, oh
yeah, it was barely better than, you know, the 2 liter was barely better than the V6 that it replaced. In this case, the 1.5 is definitely a couple of miles per gallon better than the four cylinder that it replaced. And even, you know, even an all wheel drive model, you know, getting 32, 33 miles per gallon was pretty impressive. The only thing that did not impress me about this car was the price. the Platinum, you know, which was, it has everything included and also had a couple of options. So you had, this one had the Platinum Premium package, which has the hands-free power lift gate, heated rear seats, head-up display, and tri-zone climate control, and the sunshades in the rear doors was $990. External ground lighting, the puddle lamps, $620. Two-tone paint, $350. All together with the various options, came to a grand total of $45,145. Yeah, modern vehicles are too expensive.
That's a lot for a Nissan Rogue.
Yeah,
the puddle lamp price $600. I think it's rained here a lot in the past few years. Thank God. But most of the new cars I'll end up getting have some sort of puddle lamp. I think it's only worked out once. I think only once it's like, oh, there's an actual puddle
yeah.
that I might have missed. Like every other time I'm like walking out.
Yeah, seeing the Nissan logo, you know, on the ground when you walk up to the car at night, yeah, it's a novelty the first couple of times you see it. And then it's like after that, okay, whatever. Mm. Definitely not worth $600.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but you can get, you know, the Rogue S in front wheel drive with the same engine, same powertrain and everything. Still has the same infotainment system. Starts at $28,850.
Which is less.
Yes, it's a lot less.
Which is one used car less than the one you were driving.
Even the SL trim, or you know, the you know, which is the, so you got S, SV, SL, and Platinum. Even the SL, you know, front wheel drive, is $35,700. I don't think I, you know, if I was buying one of these, I don't think I would bother with the Platinum. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
It's a Rogue's not really a, I mean, I know why everyone puts this trim, you know, that high end trim level on like almost all their vehicles, but some cars, you just, it's not, don't. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a mid tier, you know, this is a mid market car. It's, you know, it's not made, it's not a luxury vehicle. If you're buying it because you're like, oh, now I want to put all the luxury things, just buy the mid luxury car instead.
Yeah.
You're probably going to pay the same amount of money, and it, and top to bottom, it's going to be, feel a little more, a bit more luxury, versus we just add a bunch of luxury bits to this sort of, you know, medium sized SUV. The Nissan Rogue, it's not, you know, it's not the Armada. Come on, everybody, chill out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the equivalent from the Infiniti side would be the QX50, which starts at $41,000. Now, you know, the QX50's got the 2-liter turbo VCT variable compression. You know, so it's got more power. You know, it does feel more luxury. Although at this point, I would probably stick with the Rogue, just because the QX50 still has the old Infiniti infotainment system with the dual screens, which is kind of a pain in the neck to use. I think when they do a mid-cycle update of the QX50, which will probably be within the next year or so, and the QX55, it will probably get a new Android-based infotainment system, a single-screen system, and that should be a lot better. And then I would say, yeah, I mean, if you want it, instead of spending $45,000 on the Rogue, spend a similar amount on the QX50 once it has the new infotainment. Yeah. For now, maybe sticking with the Rogue might actually be the better solution.
Yeah, maybe just get the SV.
Yeah.
Like, this is all the things.
Yeah, just you know, get one of the mid-level trims, and you know, to that, you know, is what most people end up buying. You know, relatively, you know, usually less than 10% of customers buy the entry-level trim of any vehicle, and maybe a similar number buy the top trim level, buy something like a Platinum, and then everybody else buys those mid trims. And that's, you know, that's where all the volume is. And that's actually your best, typically your best value. I mean, if you look at the features that are on there and what you actually want, you know, those mid-level trims typically have the stuff that you really want, as opposed to, nice to have, but you don't really need it.
Yeah.
So that was the Infiniti, or the Nissan Rogue, Platinum. You want to take a stab at the destination charge?
Ooh, let me see. $1,195.
Not bad. $1,390.
All right. $1,390. Destination charges keep creeping up.
They certainly do. And you know, the Rogue is built here in the U.S. It's built in Canton, Mississippi, I think. Let's see. Final some. This one looks like this one actually came in from Japan. So,
well, I had to take a boat. Yeah. And
so it says final assembly point Los Angeles, which means it must have come in from Japan.
So it came from Japan, and then they added some bits to it. Yeah,
probably.
So for tariff reasons.
Yeah. Smartphones have gotten way more expensive over the past decade, and all it takes is one impact on a hard floor to make you wish you had spent a few bucks to put a case on it. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone, and it only costs a few dollars a month. Nicole, Robbie, and I travel a lot for our work, and we spend a lot of time in hotels, coffee shops, airplanes, and of course, the Delta Sky Club. Connecting to the Wi-Fi in any public places with shared Wi-Fi puts your data at risk, because bad actors could be intercepting what you send and using it to steal from you. It only takes some cheap hardware to intercept Wi-Fi data, and even a smart preteen can do it. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per victim selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops the bad guys by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN uses state-of-the-art encryption that would take a supercomputer up to a billion years to crack. I have ExpressVPN on all my devices, including a MacBook Pro, Windows laptops and desktops, and Android and iOS phones and laptops or tablets. When I want to be secure, I just launch the app, click once to connect, and my data is secure. As I said, I travel a lot for my work, and I have to connect to countless public Wi-Fi networks in many countries. I have ExpressVPN on all my connected devices so that whoever else is on the same network can't see any of my data. That's important because I often have to check banks, credit card accounts, and transmit client data that might be sensitive, as well as filing articles on news that might be under embargo. ExpressVPN protects all of it, and I've been paying for my own account for years. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings, and you can get an extra 4 months for free. expressvpn.com/wheelbearings.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheelbearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, T-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. So last week, you know, we hinted at the fact that I had driven a couple of new General Motors EVs, specifically a couple of Chevrolet EVs, the new Silverado EV RST First Edition. And I've got another one that can't talk about yet, which we'll talk about next week, which is the Equinox EV. But wrote my first review for the Autopian. I'm going to be doing some stuff for them from time to time. And so that's where my my review, my 5,000 words on the Silverado RST.
5,000 words?
Yeah. Wow. Gets into a lot of detail.
I'm scrolling through it. Yeah. Scrolling. Well, it's the Autopian. I mean, they're just big.
Yeah, words. Exactly. And they said, you know, be as detailed, as nerdy as you want. So I did.
That's a dangerous thing to tell us, to tell people.
Yeah. Bottom line. The Silverado EV RST is very expensive, very heavy. There's actually a lot that's really good about it. But, you know, if you're interested in an electric Silverado, you know, unless you absolutely have to be one of those people that gets something first, you know, be the first to have first on your block to have something, I would probably wait until later in the year when the LT trim shows up. And that should be up, you know, sometime in the fall. The RST is the performance street truck model of the Silverado EV. You know, so they launched the work truck late last summer. Like, you know, they started deliveries about September to fleets. And so up until a few weeks ago, they were delivering Silverado EV work trucks to fleets, to various fleet customers around the country. And, you know, that included businesses as well as some government agencies and stuff like that. And that one, you know, got some very good, got some very good reviews in terms of its range. You know, some of the early tests that were done, you know, the TFL guys got one last October. October, November, and did some testing with it out in Colorado. It did some range testing. That one's rated at 400. The 4WT model is rated at 450 miles of range, and they got well over that, and also got well over 200 miles towing, I think about a 9,000 pound trailer with it. So the RST is the first consumer model that they're selling. This is the high end street truck. It's loaded with everything. It also has 10,000 pound towing capacity, about 1500 pound payload capacity. It's heavier than the work truck, by about 400 pounds, which means that it comes in just shy of 9,000 pounds. It's EPA rated range is 440 miles. Based on what the work truck was doing, it can probably achieve this. So that makes it far and away, the best range of any electric pickup truck that's available today. We'll see how the Ram Rev does, the extended range model of the Rev, when it comes out at the end of the year. Stellantis has said that they expect that one to go 500 miles on a charge. It does have a little more battery than the Silverado does. The Silverado's got, Chevrolet doesn't say exactly how big it is, exactly what the usable capacity is. It's been estimated that the gross capacity of the battery is close to 250 kilowatt hours, and the usable capacity on the RST is believed to be somewhere around 210 to 215 kilowatt hours, which is a big honking battery. Unfortunately, you can charge this at up to 350 kilowatts, and it's a dual layer battery. It's basically like two batteries stacked on top of each other. And so it supports charging at 800 volts. It's a 400 volt architecture in the vehicle, but it supports charging at 800 volts. And it's got a voltage splitter circuit that splits it 400 volts to each layer of the battery. So it basically treats it like charging two batteries in parallel at 400 volts each. It'll charge reasonably fast given the size of the battery. I think they said that it'll add about 100 miles of range in 10 minutes. On a 350 kilowatt charger. Stephanie Brindley and I were driving this together, and after our stop at the American Center for Mobility, where we did acceleration runs, we stopped off at Tesla supercharger that's nearby here, which has a Magic Dock, just to try it out. And it did work on the Magic Dock. We could charge it from the Magic Dock supercharger. It doesn't have plug and charge turned on yet for Tesla chargers. But it will charge, using the Tesla app. So the RST is a dual motor setup, and, Chevrolet has, on the GMC Hummer, they had, Watts to Freedom mode, the WTF mode. On the Silverado, they've got Wow mode, wide open Watts. And you engage that, it's actually much simpler to engage than it is to do the WTF mode in the Hummer. Basically, you just go, tap on the drive mode icon on the screen, and it's got the drive modes listed there. And then there's a button for wide open Watts, and you can turn it on, and you can leave it on all the time if you want. You can run in wide open Watts mode 100% of the time if you want. I would not recommend that, because the noise that the truck makes when you do that is not particularly pleasant. It doesn't sound very good. In fact, the low speed noise that all EVs are required to make, below about 20 miles an hour, the sound that they chose for the Silverado, not a real pleasant sound, and they don't give you any options for, different sounds to choose.
Is it like a swarm of bees, or
it's kind of a lower frequency, not so much bees, but just sort of a low frequency hum that's quite, it's quite unpleasant actually to hear.
Well, I mean, if you want to, alert pedestrians that the heaviest truck on the planet is barreling toward them at 18 miles an hour. There you go. What the hell?
We talked to the Chevy folks, you know, and you know, they tried to, you know, explain, you know, tried to make the excuse, you know, that, well, it's a legal requirement, you know, it has to be there. So the thing that's required legally is that it has to make a sound and it has to be at a certain volume, you know, to hear it, but they don't specify what kind of sound. And a lot of other EVs,
it could be an ice cream truck. Yeah, it could be anything.
Yeah. You know, most other EVs have much more pleasant sounds to them, but you know, fortunately, that's something that can readily be changed with a software update at some point in the future. And hopefully it will be. I think they heard that complaint from pretty much everybody that drove this truck.
Wow.
And nobody liked the sound. So hopefully they'll come out with some new options in the not too distant future.
What happens if they don't change the sound is that everyone who sees one immediately have a bad, a bad reaction to it. Like, oh my God, what is that noise? Yeah,
exactly. Oh. So when we stopped at, ACM to try out wide open Watts mode, for acceleration in WOW mode, the Silverado, makes a maximum of 754 horsepower, which is a lot of power. But this thing is also a very heavy truck.
That's true. You are hauling a small nation
pretty much
in battery.
Yeah. So, you know, we lined up, put it in WOW mode, dropped the ride height down to the entry exit mode because it's got four corner air spring suspension. So you can do that. And then did an acceleration run down this strip, which was kind of uneven pavement. And one of the things that everybody noticed is that this thing seemed to be scrambling for grip, and the whole thing was wandering back and forth a little bit.
Okay. This is where I get back on my soapbox about the fact that EVs, the whole EV 0-60 arms race, stop.
Yes.
Stop. Especially with the trucks. There's no reason that a vehicle that big should be going that fast. Like, what are you doing? And the fact that it's scrambling
going down the strip, you know, we're constantly, you know, adjusting the steering because it's pulling back and forth from left to right. And I think part of the problem was, you know, on the RST, has 24-inch wheels and 275, 50, 24 tires, which are going to be really expensive to replace when you wear them out. So that's another reason not to use wide open Watts mode.
Wait, 50?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's two things that are already on the A. We need more sidewall. B, we don't need to go that fast.
Exactly.
From 0-60 and something that weighs as much as your entire family at a family reunion.
And the other thing is, you know, because this thing is so heavy, you know, they're 8-lug wheels, but also the tire pressures. When, you know, later on during our drive, you know, we were looking through some of the stuff in the screens and got to the tire pressure screen, and it was like 65 PSI on the fronts and 71 on the rears. So, I mean, these things were like rock.
Just holding on for dear
life. All season tires, rock hard, you know, very low profile. You know, it's no wonder this thing was scrambling trying to get traction on this track. And so, yeah, I mean, you can go 0-60 in about 4.5 seconds in this truck, but there's no reason to. Just don't.
Unless you're in the middle of nowhere and you have a bunch of stuff in the truck in the bed and you want the stuff out of the bed as quickly as
possible. Just put the bed down.
Put the bed down and take off and all your stuff will fall
there
out.
There you go. That's the only reason for wide open Watts mode.
That is the one, and again, no one else is around. No cars, definitely not pedestrians or any other humans on bicycles or children. Children, there should be a law. Children have to be at least 5 miles away from this vehicle when it does this. But if you want all the lumber in the back of your truck suddenly on the ground, this is how you do it.
But speaking of lumber in the back of the truck, you know, one thing that's distinct about one of the many things that's distinct about this truck versus both the Ram, the upcoming Ram Rev and the F-150 Lightning, is it's a unibody structure. And, you know, it's very, in a lot of ways, it's very similar to the old Chevy Avalanche 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the bed and cab, you know, are a single unitized structure. And the frame rails, there's not even a separate frame. The frame rails are integrated into the structure, and it's all designed to support this nearly 3,000-pound battery pack. When one of the advantages of doing that is they were able to bring back the mid-gate that they had on the Avalanche.
Mid-gate's bad.
And, you know, unlike the Avalanche, where it was just, you know, one panel, you know, just one piece mid-gate, this one is split 60-40. So, you know, if you still need to carry somebody in the back seat, carry a passenger in the back seat, or two passengers in the back seat, you can put down one side of it and put long items in there. You know, they had one that was sitting there with a kayak in the back with the tailgate closed, and another one that they had sheets of plywood. So with the mid-gate closed, with the mid-gate up and the tailgate up, you get 5 feet, 11 inches of cargo space, which is best in class. I think the Cybertruck has like one extra inch compared to that. So it's the Cybertruck's like 6 feet, but only at certain points in the bed, not like from top to bottom, because the everything is angled in the Cybertruck. Nothing is straight. You get 5 feet, 11 inches with the tailgate and the midgate closed. With the midgate open, you can put stuff that is up to 9 feet long in there. Up to the back of the front seats. And then with the tailgate open, the RST comes with the multi-flex tailgate that they have on some of the GM trucks. So it's got a bunch of different ways that you can open it. You know, if you just put the tailgate down and put the stopper up, you can have 10 feet, 10 inch long objects that are restrained in there. And so, you know, for a demo, they had one at the lunch stop. They had one of the Silverados there with 4x8 sheets of plywood, or 4 foot wide sheets of plywood. And then they were cut to different lengths to show what you could accommodate in the different electric trucks. And, you know, they had 10 foot or almost 11 foot long sheets in the Silverado. And then the Cybertruck was less than that. And then the F-150, and finally the Rivian was the least, cause its bed is only 4.5 feet long. So it's really practical from that perspective. That longer bed, that 5 foot 11 bed, they got that, you know, in part by, having the, getting rid of the wall, you know, the separate structure of the bed and the cab, you know, so that eliminated the gap between the bed and the cab. So you got a few inches there. Plus, the whole cab is kind of shifted forward on the chassis compared to the traditional trucks, because you don't have the engine up front. So, you know, they made the front end a little bit shorter, which helps with visibility. Your front end visibility is definitely better on this than on most other trucks. But it does cut in a little bit into the space for the frunk. So the frunk is only 9.7 cubic feet versus 14.1 on the Lightning.
I think if you're buying a truck, you care more. Well, I mean, I think if you're buying a truck to do truck things, you care more about what you can throw in that bed.
Yeah. Although, you know, I mean, the nice thing about
the frunk is great, cause you can lock.
Yeah. Them. You can put tools and stuff in there and have them locked away or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then it's also got 10.2 kilowatts of exportable power. So just like the Pro Power that you have on the Lightning. So you got outlets in the frunk, in the cab, and in the bed, including a 240 volt outlet in the bed. You can also get essentially a power strip that plugs into the charge port, into the CCS charge port, to also put out more power from there. So you can plug in a bunch of stuff there, so you can have extra outlets there as well. So it's kind of like the Hyundai vehicle to load, but you get multiple outlets on there. And what else? The cab overall dimensions are about the same as what you get in a Lightning or any other modern full-size pickup truck. So it's similar room to Lightning or a Ram. That's good. I mean, that's a huge amount of room. If you sat in the back seat of any crew cab, modern crew cab, full-size pickup, it's like a limousine in terms of backseat space. You have tons of legroom, tons of headroom. So lots of space in there for, you know, for a crew in the crew cab. And overall, you know, on our drive, we averaged about 2 miles per kilowatt hour, which is similar to what you get with a Lightning or a Rivian, and mm-hmm. or a Cybertruck for that matter. You know, the right,
they're bricks. They're essentially yeah. bricks just rolling down yeah. the road.
And given how heavy this thing is compared to the others, that's actually pretty good. It's more efficient than I would have expected it to be. And
the Hummer truck is like 1.2 or something
yeah.
weird that I got when I was driving it. I was just like, well, this is
yeah. Great. Well, the Hummer is also like 5 inches wider than the Silverado.
Yeah.
So the Hummer is shorter, but it's 5 inches wider and it has like a practically vertical windshield. So not great for aero. You know, they've done a lot of work yeah. on the aero on the Silverado. So that helps a lot. The ride quality is just so-so. You know, you got the air spring suspension, but those 24-inch wheels inflated to 65, 70 yeah. PSI, it's not, you know, not the best. That's, again,
it's all just a design yeah. thing. It just looks cooler. It doesn't help you in any other aspect. It's not good for ride quality. It's not good for handling. It's not good for efficiency. It's not good for, you know, the amount of air you got to shove in there. It's not good for keeping the tires from wearing out.
At the lunch stop, they actually had a couple of work trucks there, and we took those on a short loop, and then did the RST back to back with the work truck on this about a 20-minute loop, and the difference was amazing. I actually really preferred driving the work truck, because it's 400 pounds lighter. I mean, it's still heavy. It, you know, it's over 8,500 pounds, but you know, 400 pounds weight difference from the RST. It's on 18-inch wheels, you know, with, you know, tires with decent sidewalls on them. And even though, you know, it's a mere 510 horsepower, yeah, you know, that's more than enough.
Yeah. You don't need more.
Yeah. So, you know, again, this, you know, the work truck is, I think, you know, probably more Spartan than most customers want in terms of its interior. It's all hard plastics, you know, vinyl seats. I mean, it's a work truck. It's what you expect from a work truck.
It's a work truck. You load it up, you go do your job, you get back in the truck, you drive yeah. home, the end.
But I think the, you know, the combination of, you know, the LT, you know, will probably be, that's probably going to be the sweet spot for this thing. You know, the mid-level trim, you know, it'll have more features that consumers will want. You know, it'll have smaller wheels. It's not going to have 24-inch wheels. It's going to be lighter than the RST. It probably won't have the wow mode, which you don't need.
Why? Yeah.
So that'll be the, you know, if you want, you know, the an electric pickup with the most range, especially for towing, especially if you want to tow with it, you know, having that, that kind of range on, you know, 200 plus miles of towing capability with a big trailer. You know, I think that's going to be the one that people will want, and it'll also be a lot cheaper. You know, it's not going to be cheap, but it will be a lot more affordable than the $96,000 yeah. price tag of the RST.
What's the work truck cost?
They haven't said what the current price is. You know, so they from the time that they originally announced the RST till it's about a month ago, they reduced the price by 10 grand. The work truck, when they launched it, the 4WT with the big battery was going for 78,000. They also have a 3WT now, which has a 20 module battery. So it's about 170 kilowatt hour battery. But that, you know, that still has just shy of 400 miles of range. And I don't know, they haven't said how much that one is, because they haven't posted the consumer pricing for those yet. That should be posted pretty soon. Okay. Cause they're going to start deliveries of those to consumers, anytime now. What else? Another reason to avoid the RST is the interior was definitely much nicer than the work truck, but still not what I would expect in a $100,000 vehicle. You know, the leather seats were nice, but there's no massaging on the seats. They're heated and cooled, but no massage, which, you know, you get in the $87,000 Lightning Platinum, but it doesn't go as far. You know, but the materials on the dashboard, it had this textured synthetic material, which was fine, but it didn't feel that premium. And one of the odd things, you know, they had some contrast stitching in certain places, like on the armrest and on the steering wheel. And those looked fine because the way they did them, the stitching was, you know, it's like where you're joining two pieces of material together. Mm-hmm. But for some reason on the dashboard of the RST, they had a strip of red and blue stitching across the dashboard, but it was not, you know, straddling a gap between two pieces of material. It was just kind of just there for looks.
It's like an accent.
As an accent, yes. Yeah. And the thing is, you know, clearly they stitched the material before they put it on the dashboard. And then, you know, when they put these on, you know, they stretch the material over the whatever the substructure of the dashboard is. And so when you look at the stitching, it wasn't straight. It was a little wavy.
Yeah, I'm looking at your photo and it's like a little
bump. And so it's just, you know, so it's just those little details. I mean, if you're paying $100,000 for a vehicle, you expect them to get those details right.
I think people like, well, I'm paying $100,000 a vehicle. I mean, you're really paying just for a really big battery for this vehicle. Yeah. But at the same time, you kind of, you know, GM wants to make money on this. They're like, okay, how do we save some money? Because, you know, that's where, you know, that's the biggest cost for this vehicle is this giant battery. So how do we make it feel a little premium? I don't know. Throw some stitching around. Throw some stitching. Should we do it before we stretch it onto the parts? Nah. Well, yeah. You know what? Yeah. You know what? Do that. I think it'll be crooked. Nah, no one will notice. Sam gets in the car. What's going on here?
The Silverado, I think when we get the lower priced trim levels, I think it'll be a much better value. It's still going to be too heavy.
Oh yeah.
But I think it'll be a lot better value for most consumers. I would not recommend the RST, but I think the LT, and then they said early in 25, they're also launching a Trail Boss trim. So that's the other thing. Mm-hmm. This one, you know, it's got the air springs, and when you go in the drive modes, there's an off-road mode, but trust me, you do not want to take this truck off-road. Not with those skinny little tires at those high pressures. Yeah, I mean, it'll be fine, you know, going down, you know, a gravel trail, you know, to a cabin or something like that. But this is not an off-road truck.
You're going to debead those tires so quickly.
You definitely want to wait.
And then you're going to mess up those really expensive
wheels. Yeah, you definitely want to wait for the Trail Boss. For
this. Sidewall's going to be all sliced, and now you got to get a new tire. Now your wheel's got a big chunk out of it now.
I mean, those tires are probably going to be – I haven't been able to find them listed anywhere yet. They're Michelin Premacy all-season tires. But I think they're probably going to be somewhere around $500 a piece.
Oh my gosh. I saw the Silverado. I went down to the GM, the opening. While you were in driving trucks, I got to look. But I got to see Mary Barra, so that was nice. The midgate. I love the midgate. I love it. And I really like their tailgate. It's just I look at it and I'm like, I would love everything about this if it was the size of a Maverick.
Yes. Yeah.
And an EV. Because
or even a Colorado.
It's just it's so much truck. It's more truck than I think most people need. But people love big trucks. So they're gonna go, you know, they're aiming, you know, that's a cash cow for the big three is their trucks. The profit margin on them is bonkers compared to everything else in their lineup. But it doesn't work that way with the EVs. Yeah. And also, again, I'm going to say people who want big trucks, they want vroom, vroom. Vroom, vroom, big truck. That's what they want.
Oh, so, in wild mode, it makes noise. Might not be the kind of noise that you want to hear, but it makes noise.
I think I've only seen like one. I've seen a lot of Lyrics lately.
Oh, yeah?
I've gotten up to like 7 Lyrics in the last week on the road. They just keep – and they're all different ones, and they just keep popping up and popping up.
And the Lyrics are actually starting to sell at a decent pace. You know, they're getting them built.
It's a good EV. I drove it a few, you know, week or so when you were gone for that thing. I drove it for the first time since it came when since that drive program like 2 years ago where the software wasn't great. And I drove it and it was it was really nice. And I came back, I'm like, this is the money making one right here. But I think, you know, GM can make a good EV. I mean, I think the Bolt was a good EV. I really like the Lyric. The Blazer is the Blazer. The Lyric's better. Just get the Lyric if you're looking at this. If you're cross shop, just pay the little extra.
I'll have another option to recommend next week.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be, you know, yeah, we'll see.
But, I mean, we didn't have any issues with the software. You know, the Super Cruise worked great, in the Silverado. And you can tow with Super Cruise, and the GM trucks. So, you know, they won't do auto lane changing while you're towing. Otherwise, you know, they work really well when you're towing, with Super Cruise.
I would keep your hands on the wheel.
Yeah. probably wise, but,
one gust of wind. It's really windy around here. Yeah. It's just like super, like, whoa, what's happening? Yeah.
So that is the Silverado EV RST first edition. Good truck in a lot of respects, some questionable decisions in others, and wait for the LT or the Trail Boss.
Yeah, definitely. I think the LT. Or get the work truck.
Yeah.
Work truck sounds rad.
I mean, you don't you don't get the mid gate on the work truck, which is one downside. They don't offer the mid gate on the work truck.
Maybe just get the LT.
I think the LT is, you know, as we said earlier, you know, that those mid trim levels are usually the sweet spot. That's usually the best combination of price and features that people actually want. All right, so as I mentioned, I drove to Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin this week for the Mama Spring Rally, and there was like 80 vehicles there, you know, over 100 media, and we were circulating through all these different vehicles. Got to drive some of them on the track, some of them on the street. Got to spend a little more time on the street with the Volvo EX30, which still a really impressive car. Talking to Volvo, they're still working out what they're going to do as far as tariffs go, because initially it's being produced in China. Yeah, and this thing starts at $37,000, but you know, it's a nice little car. If you're looking for a smaller EV, it's actually a really nice option. They are going to start producing them in Ghent, Belgium next year, but they're supposed to be on sale here in the next month or two.
I know people who have them on order, and they just keep getting emails about delays.
Yeah.
And now with this, I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Do they eat the cost? Like, when does that go into effect? Does the tariff affect as soon as they sign it? They're like, it's now there's a tariff. Or is it like, okay, in 3 months, this is going to happen?
It goes into effect, you know, from the time it was announced. But there was Volvo, I guess, was taking advantage of something in the trade laws where you could get some exemptions on stuff that you were importing based on exporting, you know, so there was some offsets you know, they've been exporting vehicles, Volvo vehicles that they build in South Carolina. So like S90s, V90s that they were building in South Carolina, they were exporting those. And so that offsets some of it, but I don't know if there's enough exports to offset, you know, what they're looking at for the EX30. But they are also about, I think this week, actually, I think they're supposed to start volume production of the EX90, which is their new electric three-row SUV. So it's basically an electric XC90. That's, I think, the production starts this week, I believe, right after Memorial Day. And so there will probably be more exports of that one. So we'll see how it all plays out, you know, if they can still do that.
Yeah, because I feel like people who put their, you know, they've been waiting for this, and then they'd be suddenly be like, oh, by the way, now you got to give us a lot more money in order to buy this car. It seems like, I understand,
you know, the reason for the thing. You know, a manufacturer doesn't necessarily have to pass along that tariff. I mean, they can pay it, you know, and
Yeah, they just eat the right. cost. And so I was wondering if they're going to eat the cost for that first delivery.
They might. There's definitely a possibility they might do that. You know, Geely could afford to do it for a while. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
They'll probably do initial. I'm guessing they'll probably everyone who's ordered one, they'll eat the cost, but they're going to roll them out real slow and try to get that Belgian factory up and running so they can start doing that because they want to get it. They're going to want to get it out there before the EV3.
Yeah,
they're going to want to get as many on the road as they can before the EV3 shows
Absolutely.
Up. Absolutely. That's they're gunning for each other at this point.
And we'll get to the EV3 in a minute. Some of the other stuff I drove on the track. I drove the Mustang Dark Horse, which, what can you say? You know, big honking V8, you know, manual transmission, can't go wrong. It was fun, but I also get to drive the Hyundai Ioniq 5N for the first time.
So jealous. I could have gone, and I didn't go.
I should have gone,
and it's just weighing on my soul. Because.
So the for those as a refresher, the 5N is the Ioniq 5 performance model that is the highest performance version of any EGMP vehicle so far. Up to 640 horsepower in boost mode, the dual motor setup, and it also does simulated sound and simulated shifting. To give feedback to the driver about, you know, to simulate the kind of feeling they're going to have driving something like, you know, say an Elantra N or a Veloster N. And I drove it, you know, until I drove it, I wasn't convinced that it was necessarily a good idea, but boy, was it fun. You know, you got paddle shifters, you can, you know, shift it manually, you know, quote unquote, shift it manually. It's making noise. There's a tachometer there. I'm not sure what the tachometer is actually representing because the electric motor is just spinning it, you know, it's just a one speed you know, reduction gear setup. Mm-hmm. But they're, you know, it makes it feel like driving it, you know, a high performance N car. The funny thing was later in the day, you know, so I drove. That was the first car I hopped into. I managed to grab it first thing in the morning before the lineup started building for that one, which they never got through in a day and a half. You know, they didn't get through everybody that signed up to drive it.
That's a bummer.
So I managed to snag it first thing and get the first lap on the track in that thing. But, you know, there's all this noise on the inside. Yeah. And it's not really ridiculously loud, but, you know, it's kind of what you would expect. You know, in a performance car. But then later in the afternoon when I was standing trackside taking some photos of the cars running around on the track, none of that noise is on the outside. It's only on the inside. It's only for the driver. So it's still quiet on the outside. So it was pretty wild. And then, you know, I drove the Kia EV6 GT, which has a little bit less. I think it's like 580, 590 horsepower. Later on, and you know, it doesn't have any of the simulated shifting or noise, and it's nearly as quick, but it did not feel the same. And you know, I was talking to James Bell from Kia about it, and he wanted my opinion on it. He hasn't had a chance to drive the 5N yet. He was gonna try and borrow one from the Hyundai guys across town when he gets back to California. But it sounds like they're thinking about doing something like that with a higher performance version of the EV6 GT, at some point as well. And this, like I said, because it doesn't make any noise on the outside, it's a very different kind of thing from what Dodge is planning to do with the Charger Daytona.
Which is just annoying. Yeah. Annoy the people on the outside with 120 decibels or something?
Something like that.
116? Yeah. Something that's actually bad for you.
Yeah.
As someone who's on stage and goes to a lot of shows, that's too much noise.
Yeah.
That's not good for you. That's not good for your ears.
Well, we'll see what they end up doing with that with the Fratzonic exhaust system on those cars. But to give you an, you know, to like this thing is so quick. You know, I actually wasn't paying attention to the speed so much in the Hyundai, but in the Kia, you know, I was checking the speedometer and coming out of turn three, at Road America, you know, there's a bit of a straight there. And then, you know, to keep things under control, they had a chicane set up about three quarters of the way down before you get to turn five. And mm-hmm. I was easily hitting 115 miles an hour on there before braking for the chicane. And then similarly down Kettle Bottoms, which is the long straight that leads to Canada Corner at Road America. I'll put a link to a track map so you can see what the circuit looks like if you're not familiar with Road America. I hit almost 120 there before braking for the chicane. That's in the EV6, and I was doing at least as fast, if not faster, in the Hyundai.
So the EV6 does have some body roll.
Does have a bit of body roll, and actually the Hyundai has a little bit of body roll as well. Not as much.
Yeah, that's why. Because I remember driving them back to doing the Onyx, the regular ones, and I felt like the EV6 had a little bit more body roll. And then I got the GT, and I drove it, and I loved it. And then the Onyx 5N came out, and I'm like, oh man. Yeah.
So those were fun. And then the off road course. They had some interesting stuff there. I did the off-road course in the Tacoma TRD off-road trim. They didn't have a TRD Pro there yet. And I did it in the Hummer EV SUV. And it definitely demonstrated the value of four-wheel steering. You know, having four-wheel steering on that thing. That thing is still way too wide for most trails.
It's so big.
You still have to be extremely careful to make sure, you get between the trees because it's so wide. But the four-wheel steering was great in that thing going off-road and maneuvering through tight corners in the woods. But I also got a chance to drive the Ineos Grenadier.
Oh, I'm driving that a few weeks. How was it?
It's interesting. I think they have the foundation of something really good. So the Ineos Grenadier, when Land Rover stopped making the old style Defender a few years back, the guy, I forget his name now, who is the CEO and chairman of Ineos, which is a global petrochemical company, wanted to continue building the Defenders. And he went to Land Rover and said, look, I want to buy the tooling from you and continue building this vehicle. And Land Rover said, no, we're not selling it. And so he said, okay, fine. And he went and hired a designer to design something that looks very much like an old Defender. Got the factory in France where they used to build the Smart 4.2 and lined up a bunch of suppliers, including BMW, to supply the 3-liter turbo inline 6-cylinder engine and ZF for transmissions and an Italian company for axles and Magna for a bunch of other stuff. And they created the Ineos Grenadier. If you like the old school Defender more than the current modern Defenders, this is the vehicle for you.
If you're a big fan of the police procedure, the British police procedural Vera, you're going to want to get the Ineos Grenadier.
Off road, it was really great. It's got, solid axles front and rear, it's got all the articulation that you expect. It's got lots of ground clearance. It's got locking differentials front, rear, and center. And there's on the roof, there's a panel with a whole bunch of toggle switches for all the stuff. And then more switches down below on the center stack and switches everywhere. And it's funny when I got into it the first day for the off-road course, it was still running. The previous person who'd been driving it just left it running, and I hopped in there to drive it. The next day when I went to drive it on the street, I was looking around and Jill Simonillo, who was on the show with us a few weeks ago, she was riding with me, and we're both looking around trying to find the start button for the engine. We couldn't figure out how to start the engine. And then I leaned over past the steering wheel and looked and saw, oh shit, there's a keyhole there. and I picked up the key and pressed the button, and it was actually, I had to stick the key in and turn the key to start the Grenadier.
Wow.
Off-road, it was really good. On-road, ride quality was surprisingly good. The biggest issue I had with the way it drove was with the steering. It feels like there's no caster in the steering. So when, you know, for those not familiar with steering geometry, you know, typically on most vehicles, you know, if you look at where the ball joints and everything are, where the steering axis is, if you actually draw it out, draw a line through the steering axis, is typically tilted back a little bit at the top. So it's further, the axis intersects the ground further forward than it does up at the top steering point. And what that does is that gives you your self-centering. So when you come out of a corner, you release the wheel and the car, you know, as you're driving, the car straightens itself up. The Grenadier seemingly has no caster. There's no self-centering at all, which may be really good off-road when you're going over all kinds of stuff and you don't necessarily want the steering jerking back and forth. But, you know, that means that you have to manually turn the wheel back, because if you don't manually turn the wheel back, it'll just keep turning. It'll keep going in a circle.
So does it have the little, oh, it does. I'm looking at the picture. Does it have a little center point at the top of the wheel? So, you know, when you're going straight.
And then the other thing is the steering is also really slow, which again, good for off-road use. You don't necessarily want really fast, twitchy steering off-road, but not so great for driving on-road, which is probably where most of these things will spend most of their life, you know, realistically.
Yeah.
Is anybody spending, you know, $80,000 to $100,000 on an SUV probably not going to be taking it off-road very much. Yeah.
Which is
unfortunate, because it's actually really, really good off-road.
That's its jam. I guess you buy this, move to Alaska.
Yeah.
Or to Hawaii. Like, you know, there's a lot of, I don't think people realize how much off-roading there is in Hawaii. But yeah, move to one of the newer states.
Or Colorado, we haven't
finished doing things. Yeah, or Colorado.
The other thing that was annoying that, you know, the TFL guys had a Grenadier for a couple of months. You know, they bought one and they shot a bunch of videos with it and they posted those on their channel. One of the things that they highlighted during the very first video they did when they were driving it back from, I think from Colorado Springs or wherever, back to Boulder, where they, you know, where they bought it to back to their home base, is the Grenadier has an alert when you exceed the speed limit. Like when you go over the speed limit by 1 mile an hour, it beeps at you.
Oh, beep.
You can go into the settings and turn that off, but it resets back to on every ignition cycle, which is really, really annoying.
Yeah, I can see that. Because everyone, I'm sorry, but everyone speeds.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you should be doing 100 miles an hour.
But I mean, it's not uncommon to, you know, be going 2, 3, 4 miles an hour over the speed limit. You know,
yeah.
Especially on the highway, you know, maybe going 5 or 10. I mean,
does it tell you that the reason it's making that noise is because you're going over the speed limit?
Yeah. There's an icon that flashes on the dashboard.
Okay. Cause when I was driving that Fiat 500 last week, like there was a beep and I'm like, I don't know what that's for. Every once in a while, I'd make a beep, and I'm like looking around for something, anything to tell me what that beep is for. And I'm like, well, here we go. And our Hyundai, it'll do a beep sometimes where I'm like, I don't know what that is. I mean, I know when the blind, if I have my blinker on and it thinks it sees a vehicle in the other lanes as I'm going down the freeway, it'll be like, hey, 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 it'll do a little beep and stuff. And I'm like, I understand that beep. And I know the beep when, like, you know, the like if the seatbelt isn't plugged in, but there's just a whole other beep, and I'm like, I don't know.
So that's the Ineos Grenadier. Colleen's gonna try and get me one as well for a week long review in the not too distant future. So we'll see what it's like to live with.
I think I'm going to Palm Springs to drive this.
Oh, are they doing an event out there?
Yeah, they're doing a drive program with it. So I'm going to that. So it's a lot of like, oh, there's going to be off-roading. Yeah, because I'm going to be like camping and stuff with it. So, yeah.
Well, that should be fun. I'll take it off. That's definitely the way to experience this thing.
That's his jam. That's exactly what you should be doing.
That's what this thing is built for. It's built as an off-road vehicle. So that's the one other highlight from the rally. I also drove the Polaris Slingshot R. So the Slingshot is a three-wheeler made by Polaris, who also makes snowmobiles and jet skis and side-by-sides and quads and all kinds of stuff like that. So the Slingshot R is a three-wheel roadster, you know, kind of a modern take on the old Morgan three-wheeler. Big fat tires on it. The R, which is the highest performance version of it, has 200 horsepower four cylinder engine, putting its power down through a single rear wheel, which the one I drove was manual transmission. I came up to a stop sign and, you know, then was going to turn back onto the main road, towards the end of the drive loop to head back into the track. And when I went to accelerate, away from the stop sign, you know, there was no traffic coming. I had that rear wheel spinning for probably a good 2 seconds. There's way more power from this thing than you can safely put down through that rear wheel.
You know, what's also fun is that, you know, what's in the center of every road in America? Oil.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's an interesting ride. I think, you know, most people probably aren't going to get the R model, which is the highest performance model. And most are probably going to go for one of the lower end versions. The R model starts at $35,000. The one I was driving, I think, was about 38 and change. But the Slingshot S starts at $22,000. It's a two seater. I'm used to driving my Miata, a first generation Miata, which has pretty low sides. You know, you feel compared to modern cars, you feel very, very exposed in that thing. Boy, did I feel way more exposed in this thing.
Cause there's no doors.
You just have the seats. One, you know, if you do plan on getting a Slingshot, I would highly recommend that you get the performance seats, which have much more bolstering rather than the comfort seats, which are kind of flat and don't really provide much lateral support, which is not what you want in a vehicle like this that's that wide open. And of course, it is technically a motorcycle, classed as a motorcycle. You just have a little tiny windscreen in front of you that, you know, doesn't really do much of anything. You know, so I was wearing a helmet while riding this thing, driving this thing. The SL or the S model, the base S model, is a mere 178 horsepower as opposed to 200 horsepower in the R. So that's the Slingshot. That's the 2024 Mama Spring Rally. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Kia EV3.
Someone had a lot of fun while I was working on my water heater.
Tell us about the Kia EV3.
Oh, man, the Kia EV3. So sometime, about a week ago, I don't know, on the 23rd, whatever day that was, Kia had their little EV3. We all pretty much had seen it, essentially, when they showed it off, and then I guess it leaked as well.
Well, they showed it as a concept at the LA Auto Show and at CES this year as well.
Yeah, so we all kind of pretty much saw it. What it is someone got an EV9, and they got a shrink ray from Professor Fink, and he just shrunk it down. So if you like the styling of the EV9, and you like the EV9, well, but you don't need a vehicle that big. You're like, I don't have that many friends, or you don't have kids, or whatever. You can get the EV3, which is just like, you know, smaller. And I mean, they said they're going to keep the Niro around, the Kia Niro.
I can't imagine it'll stick around for that long.
But if, yeah, I think it's they're just going to run through, you know, whatever the parts they have left for this, they're just going to keep running through it. And then this is going to be that vehicle. It starts at, they're saying, you know, when we sort of talked to them over, you know, they were in like a Q&A over the internet. They're saying like 35 to 50 is where they're, you know, looking at this. So it's going to start at 35 and then, you know, you can option it up to 50 is pretty much the idea. 300 miles of range is sort of what they're going for. It's on, but it isn't the 800 volt architecture. It's still the EGMP, but it's a 400 volt architecture. So it's not going to charge nearly as quickly as like the EV6.
But they still say it'll go from 10 to 80% in 31 minutes. So,
yeah. So it's got a smaller battery. So it's still gonna charge pretty quickly. You just want to make sure that your charge rate makes sense with the battery that you're using. they didn't put the all I wanted them to do was open the rear hatch. That's it. That's all I wanted to see, how much room is back there. It looks like it's probably going to be about the same amount of room as you get in the Niro or the Kona Electric, except that this is based on the EGMP platform. So it's not, you know, it's not sharing its platform with gas. So the floor is lower. There's no tunnel. There's nothing. It's just an EV. And it's got a teeny tiny little frunk, which is sort of like a first for Kia at this point. we're not getting it until it's July in Korea. And then United States, they just said 2025.
Yeah, that's what James Bell said as well. He said sometime next year.
Yeah, sometime next year. Which, if you're looking for something right now, you know, there's still plenty of. But it's, you know, I think this is 35, 300 miles. I mean, this hits so many. You know, it's the right size. It's a small little. You know, it's a little crossover or small SUV or whatever. A lifted hatchback, whatever you want to call it. It's, you know, it's what a lot of people sort of want. It's at a good price point. And yeah, I think they're going to sell a lot of these. I think this is going to do really well for them. I think the Niro and the Kona Electric are sort of almost forgotten by most people. They don't realize that those are actually things out on the market. And you know they're older technology, even though they're just updated. They're still not EGMP. So this is So you might want to say Hyundai will have a version of this at some point, and you know give a little hug to your Niro and your Kona EV because I think they're not long for this world. I think we get another year or so of the Niro and maybe 2 years. With the they just refreshed the Kona, so we'll probably get another two to three years of those. But yeah, I mean it you know, if you like that look of the EV9, if you want something that is going to give you a lot more range than, you know, what Kia and Hyundai are offering right now at that price point, this is definitely it. And again, I think you know, when this is, I feel like, you know, some automakers, you know, they keep stepping back, they're slowing things down, they're changing, and I think they're really giving up a lot of the EV market to Kia and Hyundai, and it's gonna bite them in the ass in 5-10 years because people are gonna get, you know, people who want EVs they're gonna get into these vehicles, they're gonna like them, and then there's gonna be brand loyalty around it. I think you know what's gonna happen is the same thing that happens with like Subaru people and Toyota people, where they get into the vehicle, they're like, oh, this is exactly what I want. It's, you know, it's exactly what I need. I'm just gonna keep buying this brand till the end of time. And I think Hyundai and Kia are really, I think that's where they're at. And I think the next few years are going to be very key for them in sort of establishing themselves as an automaker that in some people's minds just isn't top tier, when the reality is they are. And now they're getting people in those cars and they're like, oh, these are really nice.
And I wouldn't be shocked if the EV3 is one of the vehicles that's produced in the new Hyundai Group plant in Savannah, Georgia next year. That plant, yeah. You know, is they're supposed to start production in Q4 of this year. You know, they pulled that plant ahead based on the IRA tax credits because they wanted to get U.S. domestic production of EVs. And so it would not surprise me to see the EV3 be one of the cars that they build there.
Yeah, they didn't. They were a little cagey on localized manufacturing, but the fact that they're like 2025, and then that was it, and that's the only, I'm like, okay, yeah, they're going to build this at the plant, and then the EV2 is coming as mm-hmm. well, so that's a whole other. They're like, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to build the EV2 as well, so that's a thing that's going to happen.
Although we probably won't get the EV2 here, though. I think.
Who knows? Yeah. To be honest,
good point.
With Kia and Hyundai, they might just look at it and say, you know what? Maybe we could just sort of do that here as well. They're going all in on this, and they're you know, and I think they know what the future holds. They, as a company, everyone's doing it. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of infighting within the company about EVs versus, you know, some other companies, and I think that's helping them. And, you know, on a per unit basis, they're making money off every vehicle. And they've been telling me that for years. So, you know, no one's going to be making money off EVs for quite a while. I mean, you can just look at the Tesla model, where it's, you know, 10 years of losing. But, you know, the first couple of years of any new car, you're not really making money, to be honest. I mean, the Bronco might sell like hotcakes, but for the first few years, you know, you're still paying back all that R&D and all that design and, you know, everything that you had to do to make that vehicle what it is. And so
pay for all the recalls in the first year or two, you know.
Yeah. Recalls and all the marketing and, you know, and appeasing people who have been ripped off my dealership. So, yeah, no, I mean, 35, and then you throw a $7,500 tax credit on there. You know, you're looking at a pretty relatively inexpensive. It's not the Bolt. It's not a, you know, but if they look at the market and they see that the Bolt is taking too long and they decide to bring the EV2 in, I mean, the Bolt sold 67,000 units.
Almost 70 last year.
Yeah, almost 70,000 units last year at, like, you know, that $27,000 price point. And I think that's under 30. People are, yeah, if you can make it happen and, you know, you get nice quality vehicle you can just cruise around town in. I mean, it was the best selling EV that didn't have the word Tesla printed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And, you know, this, you know, I had been considering the Volvo EX30 as, you know, as one of the vehicles on our short list for our next vehicle when we replace the Civic. But, you know, looking at this one, you know, I mean, it's going to be in a similar price range and probably actually even more range than the EX30, and really good looking vehicle. And it also has, you know, it has a display in front of the driver for the instruments, which the EX30 does not have.
Yeah. See, that's a big thing for me. Cause you can tell me everything you want, but I want I don't want to have to look around for things. I want to look straight down. That's, you know, our brains work better that way. Our eyes work better that way. It's a safety issue to me. And yeah,
I think this is definitely a potential. And, you know, it's got some physical controls for volume and for the temperature and fan speed. So this could definitely be on our short list.
Yeah, that whole company is they are not like holding back. They're not like, oh, I don't know. They're just like, we're doing it. We're doing it. You're just plowing ahead. And I see a lot of, you know, I've been seeing a bunch of EV9. Again, I live in Northern California, which you know, you can't swing a stick without hitting like 12 EVs. But, you know, as sort of a bellwether, I've seen a lot of EV9s on the road right now. So. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a few in the last week as well. So they're definitely picking up the pace.
And people, yeah, you get in that car and you're like, oh, I really like this car, and then your next car, and then your next mm-hmm. car, and then your next car, and you know
you build that brand loyalty.
You build that brand like Hyundai's definitely thinking about 10, 20 years, you know, 30 years in the future, where people are like, okay, 3 cars from now, we want them still in that mm-hmm. Hyundai. We want them to still be, you know, again, like Subaru and Toyota people. Subaru and Toyota people, they're like, I'm just going to buy another Subaru because it's utilitarian. It does everything that I want, and it's relatively comfortable, and my dog.
There you go.
All they need to do is like, if Hyundai starts just throwing dogs in cars, you're like, oh no.
All right, let's move on. The Honda Civic is getting a mid-cycle update for model year 2025. That includes the addition of two-motor hybrid powertrain. So the old Insight, which was based on the previous generation Civic, is gone. And now they've dropped the Insight name, and now it's just Honda Civic Hybrid again. And it's actually, apart from the Type R, it is the apparently the most powerful Civic that they've ever, that they've ever sold here. 200 horsepower, 232 foot-pounds of torque. Not too shabby. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I think it's, I don't think the Insight was selling that well.
It wasn't.
In fact, I forgot that the Insight, I remember when the Insight came out, I'm like, oh, this is kind of a cool little car. And then it just sort of, it got morphed into something that was sort of boring and forgettable. And it sort of disappeared on the road. And the Civic brand is the Civic brand. It's going to be around for till the end of time. And so just making it better, like grabbing that powertrain and throwing it into a Civic makes a lot of sense. And if you're Honda, you're like, okay, how do we consolidate, you know, these two things? I mean, I still think the Fit should have stayed longer than it did. When you know, like, well, we still have the Insight, but we got rid of the Fit, right? Come on. But that's an argument and a fight for another day.
Well, the hybrid's going to be available in both the sedan and the hatchback, which is a good thing. The front fascia has been made a little more aggressive looking on the 25 Civic, and it's also got the new Android-based infotainment system that debuted on the Accord. All kinds of updates for the Civic for this year. Looking forward to trying out this hybrid one, though.
Yeah, and they're saying, was it they're aiming for 50 miles per gallon?
Yeah.
Nearing 50 miles per gallon, so 47. I'm just going to say 47. It's nearing it. I'm like, oh, okay.
And they expect the hybrid to represent about 40% of all Civic sales this year. They're at about 50% penetration for the hybrid on the Accord and the CRV. So those three, you know, Civic, Accord, and CRV are Honda's three top-selling models. So that's going to be a pretty significant percentage of overall Honda sales that will be hybrids by the end of next year.
Yeah, I think they're going to do well. It'll be interesting to see what happens post-Prologue with the EV sales, with EVs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've got their first EVs coming, you know, their first in-house designed EVs for North America coming in 2026 out of Marysville. So there'll be some interesting stuff coming from Honda, I hope.
Yeah, 2025 should be a pretty big year for unveiling.
Yeah. All right. Do you ever get motion sickness when you're in the car?
No, that's a lie, because I got motion sickness once in a car. There's a road in San Francisco called Taravelle, and it's downhill, and you just hit, like, you're just hitting bumps all the way down, driving down this road. And one day I was in the back seat of my friend's car, and I decided I was going to play Unreal, the video game where you run around, and you shoot things. And I played the game for like 30 seconds, and I was like, oh gosh, I was like, no, because my eyes were playing. It's a first person shooter, so you're just running around shooting, you know. And so, yeah, that's the only time I've gotten motion sick. Right, an extreme driving condition and an extreme game. So I'm very fortunate. I have had friends who have gotten cars with me. They're like, oh, by the way, I get motion sickness. And I'm like, I just picked you up in a Ferrari. I'm taking you home now.
Just going to do it very slowly.
There's a lot of reasons. Yeah, just a lot of reasons why I don't want you motion sick in a $400,000 car.
One of the things that, you know, for a lot of people it triggers motion sickness, you know, is trying to read while you're in the car. And, you know, if you're a passenger and you're on a road trip and you're bored, wanting to read, you know, not an unreasonable thing to try to do. Because of the differences, you know, in what you're feeling and what your eyes are seeing, you know, that's what triggers the motion sickness. And so Apple has apparently come up with a a scheme. It should be actually rolling out in the next version of iOS for iPhone and iPad that is meant to try to reduce motion sickness. So what they're doing is they're using the accelerometers in the device to measure the motion of the vehicle, and then having some moving dots on the screen that are not particularly visible that are supposed to help, you know, with your visual inputs and your brain to try to counteract the impact of motion sickness. So the idea is so you can be able to read the screen without getting sick.
There you go. That's nice. I mean, everyone's always, I'm fortunate. I don't get motion sickness unless I do the stupidest thing possible.
Like play Unreal in the back of your friend's car while going down.
And his laptop. It wasn't like it was on a phone. It was like a laptop, like a 15-inch laptop. So I had this big screen. It was dark. So I like had no,
no other visual cues.
Yeah. So everything, I was really just. And I was playing it like, oh, this is not good. I just closed the computer and I just sat there. I'm like, all right, I'm fine.
We talked about speed limit alerts with the Ineos Grenadier. In Europe now, there are new cars are required to have intelligent speed assist, which gives the driver alerts when you exceed the speed limit when you exceed the speed limit by about 10 miles an hour. They're supposed to give you automatic alerts. California, the state of California, the Senate at least has passed a bill that would mandate the same thing in California.
So it's over 10 miles an hour.
Yeah. If you go 10 miles an hour over the limit, then let's see,
you get a little bit.
Yeah. Let's see.
A little ding dong.
The system would, unlike the electronic limiters that physically limit a vehicle speed, the proposed intelligent speed assistance system would utilize a brief one-time visual and audio signal to alert the driver each time they exceed the speed limit by more than 10 miles an hour.
Oh, well, that's okay. I mean, to be honest, that's actually kind of good because sometimes you're like, wait, what's the speed here?
Yeah.
I'm doing 70 and it's 50. Oh, I should probably slow down.
Yeah. And most modern cars, you know, we'll already give you
one
a visual
time.
Alert.
It's not like, most of the cars I get in now, they're like, hey, buddy.
Yeah. You know, they use cameras to look for speed limit signs, and it shows you on the instrument cluster what the most recent speed limit that it saw was. And then whenever you go over that speed limit and you can usually adjust, you know, the threshold anywhere from 5 to 10 miles an hour. When you exceed that limit, you know, then the little speed limit icon that shows you your speed limit turns red most of the time or something like that, you know, to say, hey, you're going too fast. And so they want to mandate that, which probably won't be a big deal because, like I said, most cars already effectively do something like that anyway.
I don't know what I'm reading it keeps saying it's controversial. Yeah. And I'm just like, why? I'm like, why is it okay? Alert. Oh no, someone told me I was doing over 10 miles an hour once. Yeah.
Okay. Last story, the BMW Concept Skytop. Did you see this thing yet?
I'm looking at it now and I'm going to take one home.
So this was unveiled the other day at the Concorso d'Eleganza Villa d'Este in Lake Como. In Italy. It's a concept only for now. It's based on the 8 series platform. It's a 4.4 liter twin turbo V8. It's pretty stunning looking. Supposedly they're considering a limited production run of up to about 50 units, much like they did with the CSL.
Yeah. I mean, it looks great. It's, you know, everyone needs a top down. I'm still waiting for my convertible EV. Mini was supposed to do it, but now, you know, there's a whole thing with China and what they're doing. So who knows? We have to wait till that whole thing's figured out. But
need to move to Europe and get an MG Cyberster.
I know. I gotta move to Europe, I guess. Well, I'll see y'all later.
All right.
I could still do my job at SAE. It's international. It's right there in the name.
All right. And then we got a couple of emails. First up from Adam Jakowenko, longtime Patreon supporter. Thank you, Adam. So Adam suggests with the destination charge game, you know, we've been using Price is Right rules where if you go over, you lose. You know, and whoever gets closest without going over is the winner. Adam suggests that we change it to because that is kind of statistically unfair. It depends on who guesses first. The last person to guess has the advantage. To make it fair, he just closest regardless of over or under. So don't.
I mean, this makes a lot of sense. It's actually way more fair, but it also requires us to do math.
Oh yeah, there's that. So sorry, Adam. No, I can do the math.
It's like, hold on, Okay, this is $13.95, and he said $12.95, but she said $14.03, so it's $13. Okay, she won. every there's going to be a pause at every podcast now where we're like,
we can edit out the pause. That's the problem. Okay. All right. There we go. Starting next week, when Nicole's back, we'll do that. And then he also has a quick story about advising someone on a new vehicle. A friend of mine is making her first new vehicle purchase in many years and asked me which I would pick from the list she had made. Sadly, of the four she gave me, only one had physical vent controls. I asked her if she moved the vent positions with any frequency, and she said yes due to the different position preferences between her and her husband. She also thought that was a really weird question. I told her it's because there's this new thing in cars and something to consider that previously people did not have to consider. I told her to get the one with the physical controls. Also, all else being relatively equal. Sadly, she did not heed my advice and has now complained to me twice since buying the vehicle about how annoyed she is by the digital controls.
I feel like she did. Like, how is the complaining going? I feel like you're like, hey, you know, this is the worst. I told you. Come on.
Welcome to our world, Adam.
Come on, I told you.
We get asked for suggestions all the time. And as I mentioned to Adam in an email response, you know, this basically, you know, I think what most people are looking for is affirmation of what they already decided they want as opposed to a real suggestion. Yeah. Sometimes it's not, but it often is the case. I just can't fathom the decision-making process behind adding this much unnecessary complexity to a new product that provides no new functionality nor addresses any issue. And I stand with Sam in hating them. I will be in the market for a new vehicle next year, and I've already decided I'm not buying one with digital vent controls, no matter how good it is in other areas. I know it's a weird hill to die on, but I adjust vents frequently and can only imagine how annoyed I would be if I had to try to do it every time in the screen while driving.
Oh, no. I take the dogs for a walk every day after work, and I'll get in the car, and it'll be 7,000 degrees if it's summertime or 2 degrees if it's winter. And I will turn on the heat. And as soon as the heat or the cooling like spins up, I turn all the vents towards me. And then I'm like, okay, now I'm too hot or I'm too cold. But I'll push them away so it's more ambient. And so that's every time I get in the car, unless it's like a really, really nice day, I'm moving the thing. So I don't understand why they – I think there's a lot of like, well, they're doing it. Let's do this without really checking with people. And when you show people the technology, like, oh, that's kind of cool, these test groups. But they're not thinking through the idea like, oh, wait, I move these things all the time. So it's sort of following somebody because, oh, and we want to be cool. We want to be seen as this cool tech forward automaker, and then talking to people for about 5-10 seconds and asking them, like, hey, if you could do this with your computer, wouldn't that be cool? And they're like, oh, yeah, that would be cool. But never sort of like following through and realizing like, oh, they just thought it was cool. They didn't really think it through.
Yeah.
And so it just keeps going down. And once one person, it just keeps trickling down. And even though people below that person who made the decision are like, this is not a good idea, they're not going to say anything because they don't want to lose their job because they're like, they don't want to get yelled like, you hate disrupt, you know, you hate technology. You're like, nah, man, I just like having my hands warmed up and then the rest of the car warmed up.
No, absolutely right. I adjust vents all the time. And, I will not buy a car that has digital vent controls. Just It's just a bad idea. And it's usually designers that I talk to that are trying to make the case for it, you know, because they want a nice, clean looking dashboard. They want to get rid of those.
You can make them look cool, though.
I know.
Like little cool accents, and then you move them. Like you can just have the little plastic, like, you know, nib or tab or whatever you want to call it. And you're just like, okay, that's fine. But you can make them look cool. And you're just like,
well.
Just make them look cool. Don't put it in the computer. Please, for the love of God, don't do that. Yeah, it's hard for me to think about. There will be times I'll get in a car and it'll be doing something. I'm like, you know, if my wife was driving this, she'd be so angry right now.
Exactly. All right. And then finally from Shamakwa, who confirmed that that is the correct pronunciation. One more question, clarification, written in last week about the dual clutch transmissions. So from what you said, I couldn't tell if you said that the feeling and hearing of the shifting is inherent to the dual clutch's design, or is that particular engine louder than most? So, you know, how much you feel and hear, or it's mostly what you feel of the shifting is, you know, that's kind of inherent to the design of the transmission, but it's no different from shifting a manual transmission. You know, so, you know, you'll probably feel, you know, a slight dip in torque, slight dip in acceleration when it shifts, but because DCTs shift so fast, you actually will probably feel less than you would with a manual transmission, although more than you would with a traditional torque converter automatic, if that makes sense.
Bam.
And do you think it's a minor inconvenience to live with over the life of the vehicle? Yeah. I mean, I think the shift feeling depends on the specific transmission. I think people who got the Ford Focuses and Fiestas with their power shift DCT would say it's not a minor inconvenience. It's a major pain in the neck. You know, others, you know, like VW's DSG transmissions, you know, we had one of those for 7 years. It was never a problem. So it kind of varies.
It's always down to, like, if you get in the car and for 99% of the car you love, I think I could live with a little bit of like slight annoyance that I would just sort of forget about when it comes to shifting versus the vents.
Yes.
The vents.
That's a deal breaker.
That is a deal breaker. The little bit of shifting, you know, adjustments are like, all right, unless it's like over the top annoying, then fine. I know I had a friend who just absolutely hated, he had a Mazda, I don't remember what, and he hated the shift. He hated it. Absolutely. He took the car back. That's how much he hated the way it shifted. And I was like, all right, well, it was, you know, that's great. That's something that was your hill to die on. And so, yeah, if it's something that every time the car is going to shift, and it's going to do that all the time. it's sort of a personal preference, but if it's the vent thing, don't even bother getting in the car.
Absolutely. All right. That's it for this week. Thanks everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.